8:02, time to save money at the pump. Text Dave to 83835 now. Save 25 cents a gallon on your second fill up. Save even more down the road when you stack that cash back at all participating Shell gas locations. Dave and Nate, Matt George behind the glass. Katie has the rest of the day off, at least. But she'll be on tonight on the sidelines on your TV broadcast. Don't forget the radio with your Sacramento Kings versus the Washington Wizards this evening. Where are we at now? Is it six in a row for the Kings. And this obviously, you know, never say never, but this obviously looks like a loss for the Kings tonight. That this is a very hot Washington team. This is a team that is surprisingly a game behind the Celtics for the two spot and three behind the Cleveland Cavaliers for the one spot in the East. They've won 7 of 10, and they come in favored by 8 at the old Golden One Center.
All right.
Kings at 25-39. Why is that important to you? If we flip the standings like we enjoy doing, the Kings right now, currently, when it comes to the race for the old lottery balls, the Sacramento Kings are a half a game ahead of the Knicks and a half a game behind the New Orleans Pelicans, which they own their pick as long as it's not in the top three. They're also, both the Pelicans and Magic are idle tonight. They're a game and a half currently of the Magic. So by the end of the night, should the Kings lose, which they are favored to lose, they will be in a tie for the sixth spot with the Pelicans and just one game behind the Orlando Magic.
So in your little inverted standings there, because I'm still having trouble with like sixth place, whatever.
Sure.
What's the ideal range for them?
Here's where it's a problem, and where honestly luck. A lot of this is luck. You can't barrel it down to mathematics. But the ideal place for the Kings, listen, they're 4.5 behind the three spot, which is the Suns, and let's not even talk about the Lakers and Nets in 2-1. So the ideal spot, the Sixers are only 2.5 behind the Suns, and the Suns have been playing better as of late, although they've lost 2 in a row. I think those top three spots are going to be locked down. So right now you have the Sixers right outside that top three. That's fine because, remember, the Sixers have the opportunity to swap. But if the Sixers end up swapping, unless there's some crazy thing going on right now, it's not going to be that far. It's shaping up right now to where the Kings are going to have, odds are, two picks between the 5 and 8 range, let's say. And I think if that happens, I think if they get 5, 6, 6, 7, 7, 8, 5, 8, whatever it may be, I think that's about the best case scenario you could have hoped for.
Right. 5, 6 would probably be the best possible, right?
Well, the best possible mathematically, all bets are off. The best possible would be the Kings would have the 2nd and 4th pick in the draft.
Oh, okay.
The Kings would win the lottery and pick number one. They would swap that with Philadelphia, who would have the number 2 pick, let's say, in this best case scenario. And then they'd have the Pelicans pick at 4 because it's top 3 protected.
Gotcha.
The best they could possibly do is 2 and 4. And as we welcome in Sam Amick of USA Today.
It's not going to happen.
That's where we're at, Sam. You know what? We invert the standings. Instead of looking at first place by record, we look at first place by worst record. We've been here before. It's just lottery ball counting right now and looking at the youth here in Kingsland.
I know, guys, and I hate it. I tweeted about it last night. You know, whether it's the Kings or the Lakers or the Suns, you know, or any of these teams, I know it's never great to complain about things in sports and not come with the definite solution. So I don't know what the solution is. The NBA has pondered possibilities, you know, for quite some time, but it drives me nuts this time of year when you have, you know, young teams that are trying to rebuild like the Kings. You know, last night I was watching Lakers-Suns, and it was a fun game, and I was thinking to myself, like, you know, D'Angelo Russell played really well. Some of those other guys had good games. Like, they deserve to go beat Phoenix and to go to bed that night feeling pretty good about it instead of what probably happened, which is they looked at Twitter and probably had fans going, hey, way to go, buddy. You messed up the draft pick. You know, like that aspect of it is unfortunate. But, you know, Kings fans are not alone. There's a lot of teams right now just kind of watching how the ping pong balls are going to fall.
All right, Sam, we're going to solve this right now on the air. This idea has in parts been floated around before, but I want to go completely in depth real quick. So Quick answer, top of your head, this is completely unfair, but if you are the president of the Players Association, I know they just got a new CBA, but you want something from the owners. You know, you already have guaranteed contracts. You have a ton of stuff. I don't know. Would like doing away with marijuana testing? I'm trying to think of something the players want from the owners throughout the years that the owners aren't willing to give. Is there anything off the top of your head you can think of that would move the needle there?
I mean, the easiest one is BRI split, the basketball-related income. You know, if you give the players another percentage point or two, I'm sure, you know, that would be on the top of the list. As much as, you know, some of them might enjoy cannabis. I love how you reached for that first. That was great, Dave.
Okay.
But yeah, BRI. Let's go BRI.
Let's go BRI. So here's what you do. You take you take the top eight, or I should say bottom eight teams. All right. You get a rotating neutral site every single year, or hell, just put it in Seattle. And you have an alternate NCAA one-off tournament between the top eight teams. You sign a TV contract and you sell that as a package. You use the income from that and you split it very generously with the players. And then what you do is you have this one-off tournament. You seed them inversely based on where they finish in the bottom eight. And however that tournament finishes out, and of course you have a consolation bracket, that's how you seed your lottery pick. So in other words, you have an opportunity, if you're one of the eight worst teams, to enter the tournament. Should you win the tournament, you just won the number one pick in the draft. Everybody wins. The tanking thing goes away to a point. You always have a little bit of tanking. The fans win because they get a separate tournament that's scheduled alternate to the NBA playoffs, and it keeps fans of teams that are out of it in the NBA longer. Why not just do that?
So how many additional games do you think we're talking about here? Because that's the biggest thing. These guys are already complaining about too many games. And granted, if you make the playoffs, you're going to be playing extra games anyway.
That's exactly right. So you've got what is it, 14 teams that don't finish in the playoffs, is it?
If 14, correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So yeah. So you've got six teams that wouldn't factor in there whatsoever. So you have eight. It's an eight-man tournament. It's a one-off. So first round, you're going to have four games. Second round, you'll have two. Third, you'll have one. So that right there, you could play a max of seven games. Add in your consolation games, and let's say everybody's going to play somewhere between three and seven games. Plus the players, the further they advance, not only are they going to get a bigger cut of the pool, you make it real money for these guys, but they're also going to get a better pick to help their team in the offseason, which is helpful if you've got a multi-year contract and you know you're sticking with the team, so there's got to be a tiny bit of motivation there.
Yeah, no, I like it. I mean, you know, I can't poke any immediate holes in that idea.
Call Adam Silver.
How about this? Wouldn't guys want to tank that tournament, though, because they don't want some high draft pick to come take their spot on a crappy team?
Ooh. There's that, too. There is that. You know, you've got the selfish competitiveness that could come into play. I don't even think it's that much of a priority for the players. I feel like players, it's not that they're not aware of this dynamic, but they, you know, it obviously has not been a pressing enough issue for them to put it in the middle of the table during the CBA negotiations that just finished. But I feel like every year it sneaks up on us. Like it's this time of year when, you know, it just changes the way that 60% of the games that are being played right now are perceived. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
You turn it on and I hate the fact the fan, you know, listen, the longer I do this, you got to make sure you keep the fan part of you, right? Like I enjoy basketball. So the fan part of me turns on the television and I hate the fact that it's like, you know, oh, it's this team against that team. All right. I'm not really watching just a straight up sporting competition. I'm watching something that has three layers to it. And I'm not sure what I want to happen here. You know, it's all very emotionally confusing.
Sam, it seems like it's been so long really in either conference since there's been a challenger to whoever LeBron's on, or in this case, the Warriors for a couple of years. But now here you've got the Spurs. They're jumping right down the Warriors' throats without Kevin Durant. And then on the East side, Boston and Washington are both within a couple of games of Cleveland for that top spot, and Cleveland seems to be struggling. Are we not giving, let's say, Boston and Washington the biggest examples? Are we not giving them enough credit for being contenders this year?
I feel like we are, but I mean, you know, they keep pushing the envelope and they keep making it more of a story. And so the Wizards certainly need to come in and take care of the Kings tonight. And I was at the Warriors game the other night when Boston took care of Golden State in pretty impressive fashion. So they are both pushing, you know, and Toronto's not dead. They're going to get Kyle Lowry back, you know, from that wrist injury. So they're not out of the picture either, but they've certainly faded. The Cleveland thing is wild because, you know, they just can't do anything without LeBron James on the floor. I just read a column from a colleague of ours, Dave McMenamin at ESPN, talking about the Pistons game last night, and it's just crazy. Like, if he rests, they certainly lose. They're like 4-20 when he doesn't play the last couple of years. But last night, you know, he had 9 minutes of rest the entire game, 9 minutes, and they were like a minus 23. And then when he played, they were a plus 18. And so, you know, the Cavs are not finding ways to survive without LeBron. And, you know, what the Wizards and the Celtics have going is very legitimate. You know, Washington in particular has been doing it since the beginning of December, I guess the beginning of the new year, rather. And they have a good thing going. Scotty Brooks has got those guys clicking. John Wall, I think, is you know, if I had to do the power rankings thing on MVP, he's probably like 5 or 6. He's having a great year. And Otto Porter has been a nice surprise, a guy who just knocks down open threes, and Bradley Beal and the rest of them. So, you know, I really like what they have going.
USA Today's Sam Amick joining us on KHDK. You mentioned MVP and John Wall being in the equation. Nate and I were talking earlier in the week, and we thought about maybe inventing a rule that if you average a triple-double for a season, you're, like, automatically the MVP. And if there's two guys, you do a coin flip. Russell Westbrook, to both of us, is the MVP. Just, you know, in addition to his numbers, even if you go by the metric of take the guy off the team, how much worse are they? And then, obviously, LeBron James is in the equation, too. But for you, you got Harden, you got Kawhi, you have Russ, and then, of course, LeBron's always hanging around there. Do you have – who are you voting for MVP if the season ends today?
It's honestly – pretty wide open. I've had Harden out front. You know, Kawhi had his MVP moment against Harden the other day, but I also have been kind of trying to remind folks that, you know, in that particular game, it's not like Harden didn't show up. He had a better line than Kawhi, just had a, didn't have his a moment like Kawhi had, didn't have a good fourth quarter either. Harden's there. Westbrook is certainly there. LeBron and Kawhi, those are the four to me. You know, and the other guys, it's more just trying to give them some love for the good year that they've had. Isaiah Thomas, John Wall, I think, from there. So those four, Kawhi did not have a good night last night. Again, you know, another kind of MVP-type game against OKC where Russ got the job done and the Thunder win that game, and Russ had a much better night. You know, I think Kawhi was 19-2-2, something like that. So that's the fun part of the MVP race now, especially when these guys – happen to be sized up against one another, is that I think it's going to ebb and flow until the end. The Harden thing, you know, is just combination of how good their team is and that the history that we always talk about with Westbrook and the obvious history of the triple-double average. James is making history too, and we've talked about this on the show before, where, you know, the kinds of numbers he's putting up with, you know, significantly more assists than Russ. And then, you know, what he's doing scoring-wise, and he's nearing a triple-double on his own. You know, and LeBron's in the same category. LeBron's averaging a career-high in assists, and that team just falls apart without him. So it's a fun race. You know, I mean, I think I don't know who I would pick, and I think it's going to be one of those where I'm not going to be filing the votes, you know, with a week to go in the regular season.
Sam Amick with us on KHDK. I read something interesting yesterday, too, Sam, that if Russell Westbrook, for the final 18 games of his season, 17 games of the season now. If,
I heard this, yeah.
Yeah, no stat line in all 18 of those games, he'd have the same season line as LeBron did last year. He's going to set a record in all likelihood for usage rate this year. You know, kind of some advanced stuff there. But when you hear something like that, to you, does that help or hurt his case for MVP?
Which aspect?
The usage rate.
Can, I mean, it doesn't help or hurt. It's just you got to take it into account. I mean, it's not. I don't even think it's that really heady of stuff. It's not that deep analytics. It's you know, if you're playing on the middle school playground and one guy's got the ball all the time, I mean, that's usage rate. that's all it is. So the idea is that the action goes through him the vast majority of the time. And that's why with Harden, you know, it gets tough because last year we saw, like, with the Rockets, they did not have a lot of the pieces they have this year. Like, Harden technically had the chance to kind of do what Russ is doing this year, last year, meaning that his supporting cast was closer to on par with what the Thunder have now. And he just didn't do it. They didn't have a great year. He actually put up very good numbers, but it wasn't an MVP kind of year. This year, you got a guy like Harden who is kind of weaponizing all these supporting pieces and raising everybody up. And they are breaking records when it comes to the three-point game. I mean, I think they may have already passed the mark for most threes shot in a season, or they're getting close. And he's kind of the engine that makes that whole thing go offensively. So it's hard to compare all these. I feel like every single guy has one, at most two, weaknesses that you point to and say, all right, that's going to hurt you. But it all balances out. I mean, Kawhi's defense is fantastic, but he's not a playmaker, which always kind of nags at me. You know, Russ's defense is not great, except the Thunder are pretty good defensively. Like, it's really hard to make heads or tails of, you know, how to judge all this stuff.
Sam Amick with us as we just continue to go back and forth. It's a fascinating topic because this race is so crazy. So for me, Kawhi's out for a couple of things. His numbers, at least offensively, aren't there with Harden or Westbrook. Number two, I think the Spurs have less of a drop than the Rockets or the Thunder if Kawhi Leonard was out for the year. They wouldn't be as good, but I think he's got a better supporting cast. Now, with Westbrook, you lost Durant, a top three player in the league. You don't have Serge Ibaka anymore. Now, he's lost a lot of talent around him. And now you have the Oklahoma City Thunder sitting in the sixth spot, and that's probably where they'll stay. Well, they're tied with the Grizzlies, so six or seven. And then the triple-double on top of that, and then his PER on top of that. Sam, I can't wrap my head around the fact, even with James Harden, that Russell Westbrook, all things considered, is not more of a clear-cut MVP here for those reasons.
Well, keep talking, but just so I can, I didn't know where you're going to dive deep on the numbers. I'm trying to sit here and log on and,
okay, all right,
and go tit for tat here, buddy.
I'm telling you, all right, so Russell's averaging 32 points a game, which one guy has done in the last 10 years, and that's his former teammate, Kevin Durant. Okay, last guy was like Kobe Bryant, I think. He's going 32 to 29 for James Harden scoring. Assists, 10.1 for Westbrook, 11.2 for Harden. Rebounds, 10.5 for Westbrook, and 7.9. And then your PER, 30.2 to 27.6. Then you take into account what Westbrook lost.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. Although, to his GM's credit, they had a hell of a trade deadline. So he's got a little help now. I mean, Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson have fit in really nicely. And he did lose a lot, but they've drafted extremely well. And Steven Adams and Enes Kanter are very good players. And Victor Oladipo was another guy that you know, they traded for last year, and they thought that was going to help Kevin Durant stay. But Victor's another good young talent. So I think the idea of, you know, Russ on an island just making chicken soup out of you-know-what is a little bit flawed. But, I mean, you make a good argument. I just think, you know, and this is not the only argument against, but it's good that they're sneaking up to sixth. It'd be great if they could sneak up to fifth, because voters are prone to feeling the pressure of history, and history tells us that you can't be MVP when you're in the bottom half of the conference standings. That's traditionally not what has happened. Doesn't mean it couldn't happen this year. And it, you know, and he is, you know, like a night like last night is him taking advantage of the moment and trying to go out and win that MVP award. Well, the four straight losses that preceded that don't help. You know, it's going to make the numbers hollow, especially when some of the local media, and I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, and I mean local in Oklahoma City, you know, we're all kind of guilty of, we yield to the local media in each respective market and the tone that they set in coverage. Well, there's some folks in OKC who appreciate what Russ is doing, but they also will quietly tell you, like, man, it's absurd how much he's chasing these triple doubles, you know. And I always kind of get defensive for him, like, whatever, the record's tremendous when he has a triple double, so who cares? So I know that's nitpicking at the highest order, but you know, I think the winning is something to watch from now until the end. They need to win games. If they are the seventh seed, I don't think he's going to be the MVP.
Sam Amick of USA Today joining us. You think Sam Presti ever sits at home in front of a fire with a bottle of Everclear and wonders what the world would be like if he had a team that had Durant, Harden, Westbrook, and Serge Ibaka?
I don't, for one, because he's about as straight and narrow dude he's ever going to find. So he's not touching the Everclear, first right. of all. I swear to God, guys, one of my favorite experiences of this job is occasionally visiting with Sam Presti in his office in Oklahoma City. You remember the old Russell Crowe movie, Beautiful Mind?
Yes.
Like, I swear to God, like it's a Russell Crowe office.
Wow.
He's behind him. It's unbelievable. I've told Sam this. You sit and he won't let, like, it's kind of been written, but you're definitely not allowed to take pictures and there's no video. He sits in his office and behind him on the wall are, I'm going to handicap it at like 800 or 900 different motivational words that are like almost like little magnets that you would put on a fridge. And so you sit there and you try to have a conversation with him and you can't even focus on what he's saying because behind him is nothing but an entire dictionary of like inspiration. So he's a different kind of cat and he's a smart guy who has done well. And I don't think he looks backwards. He would sit there and, you know, and tell you why the James Harden thing had to happen. And still, I think to this day, he believes that's the case. And then Ibaka, you know, listen, Serge is a funny one because for one, and it's not really even, I'm not even being sarcastic, like around the league for years and years, it's been like, all right, well, they say he's 29, but he's probably 35. You know, like
right.
he, you know, he was at a stage of his life and his career where I think it felt like it was diminishing returns. He wasn't the same guy. So, but you know, one of these days somebody should write a book about the kind of the what if scenario in OKC because you're talking about the best guys in the league all in one place at one time, and obviously it wasn't to be.
That book should happen. Good thing you're a professional writer, Sam Amick, USA Today. It's a forthcoming book, The Thunder, What Could Have Been, available yes. at all Amazon locations near
the
you.
The Thunder Went Under.
The Thunder Went Under. There you go. See, I was doing it on the fly. Sam has an article out right now talking about the Golden State Warriors. Now, life ain't so great without Kevin Durant. This is ahead of their clash this weekend against the Spurs. Always a blast, my friend.
Thank you, boys.
Thank
have
you.
A great day.
All right,
thanks,
take
Sam.
Care, buddy. That is Sam Amick. We'll take a break. We still got a lot of stuff to cover, including some giveaways for you. And here's the big tease. Will Darren Collison join us after the break? Find out in just 4 minutes right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.